We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Off and running, hour two here of Sports Talk. David Wesley, Pelicans TV color analyst, joining us in about 10 minutes to talk about the Pelicans' upcoming schedule. They open up against Houston on October 17th, and then they're on the road against the defending champs on Halloween. Talk about the schedule with David Wesley momentarily. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Should the NFL revise the leading with the helmet penalty and policy? Is there clarity for the players to understand what they're going to be flagged for? There's been 25 of those flags thrown in the preseason, Bobby.
Well, I know one thing you got to see when you hit. None of these bullet heads and just kamikaze. And obviously you never want to lower your head at the last, I don't know, 10th of a second you might do it to deliver a blow, because the weapon, a hard helmet is like a weapon. But you know how they emphasize it, you got to see what you hit. And what's interesting, and that the new rule reads simply this: it is a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. So bottom line, don't lower your helmet. Because it's human instincts when you see something. Now, you have to almost now realize you have a face mask and all that. It's human instinct to duck when something's coming at you. Are you going at something?
Look at Marcus Williams.
Full speed. Yeah, so, but it's plain and simple right now. It is a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. What's different from in the past, the contact doesn't have to be helmet to helmet. You know, it's all we got to avoid those collisions. Whether it was college or NFL, we can't have helmet to helmet. Now it applies to the offensive defensive player just the same. If you lower your helmet and you hit him in the gut, hit him in the thigh, or wherever you're hitting him.
There goes the whistle.
That and you get kicked out. Now, or there could be a penalty. I think they're going to view it more the severity or the intention that – they had a montage of tackles that would be considered illegal in a new rule that prohibits a player from initiating contact with his helmet. But I think it's still going to be a judgment call, which a lot of fans don't want the officials to have that kind of power. But it's interesting because the speed of the game, you got to think about this. You're coming down here and the runner is lowering his shoulder and you're lowering your shoulder. It's just one of those things that easily could be a bang-bang play. And nothing intentional or vicious as far as just trying to play football. When, you know, if you're a running back, I'm trying to go forward and break the tackle, or the defender, I'm trying to get him down, then what are the tacklers going to do then? It's going to be a lot. They're going to have a lot of shoulder tackles. They're going to have to make it work. But you got these big running backs with you, try and trip them. Because the speed of the game, I mean, is as hard as it is. I just think it's going to take time and an adjustment. And the hardest thing to me is going to be when, like I said, a ball carrier lowers his head and just getting low, naturally your head's going to drop. Well, you have to almost fight through that. And like you said, how many calls the officials have made?
25 so far.
Okay.
So you look, week one of the preseason.
So let's say that's the average throughout the season.
It's 100
and for
the preseason.
Yeah, so let's say that happens every game. But out of the 25, Christian, how many actually got kicked out?
One.
Okay. See, I think that's what's going to happen. You can get penalized, but not necessarily get kicked out. You know what it's almost like when you have in soccer? I know you love this rule, where you have a yellow card or a red card.
I think everybody in soccer should start with a yellow card. But make it much more interesting.
But you understand what I'm saying? A yellow card.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but you got a red card.
You're out.
You got to go. But you never could do that in football. So what, you only going to play with 10 on defense?
No.
Talk about, you know, in soccer, they do, okay, you had a disadvantage. You have one less player. Well, they're never going to do that. But I brought this up to you before. You look at Walt Coleman, a household name. I mean, here's a guy who's entering his 30th NFL season. And, you know, he's talking about all his years calling a game. And he said, in the past, it's been just about football for us. You know, we know what a personal foul is, what's flagrant or not. But he said now it has gone from being a regular football play to being a foul, you know, dealing with the helmet. So it's going to be how fast do the players adjust? And I think the young players will adjust more. They might even in the future, might obviously not even in the league now, but I think they have a great opportunity to adjust because how they're going to be taught. And again, old dog, new tricks kind of scenario. But then it's also going to be how fast do the officials adjust that this is not a foul. So he said that's what's going to be challenging. So I guess that's why you have preseason also for the officials to see how they're going to call things.
All right, coming back with David Wesley, Pelicans TV color analyst, and your calls at 504-260-1870, text 870-870. Patrick and Brian, sit tight. This is Sports Talk here on WWL. Patrick in New Orleans, Brian in Biloxi, Mississippi, and Nikki in Metairie. Sit tight. Talking a little Pels. We're going to get back to the helmet rule. Just be patient with us. David Wesley joining us now.
Pelicans. Hello.
Hey, Pelicans TV color analyst. And David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
So, David, now with the schedule coming out, what's intriguing to you? I know a number of fans have brought up to me is like, whoa, we don't get to face Boogie Cousins and the Warriors at the last game in a regular season. I thought that was kind of bizarre how they had that schedule breakdown, you know, facing Boogie and the Warriors.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because I'm sure, you know, everybody wants to see him and some of them want to get back at him. But, you know, the schedule, you know, I think the things that jump out at me is, you know, there's some tough stretches to start the season, kind of a mixed bag. How well can they get off to a good start? And then also in December, they have this at Milwaukee, at L.A., at Sacramento, at Dallas, which is a lot of travel, but winnable games. So, you know, it's going to be determined by how healthy this team can be throughout the season is how well they're going to do.
Now, David, you look at, and you've been involved a number of years with the Pelicans, with the New Orleans organization. And when you look at getting off to a hot start, and you might say, well, people in these parts, they kind of wait till the new year to really embrace whether it was the Hornets or the Pelicans. But you look at the start of the season, it seems like that people are more optimistic if somehow looking at the first dozen games, when you look at the schedule there, is well, what are your expectations as far as that fast start? Because I guess like even with the Saints, I mean, you look at the first four or five games, can you be 4-1, maybe undefeated versus a 500-type team? What is your take at the start of the season when you look at the schedule?
Well, you know, especially, you know, you want to win at home. And there's some winnable games at home when you start looking at the games that they have. You talk about the first dozen, Sacramento, the Clippers, Brooklyn, Utah. Those are their first couple of road games at home, and then they go out on the road for a long West Coast trip, and then they come back and play Chicago and Phoenix. So, you know, it's a chance to get off to a good start, and the Pelicans, you know, in my 7 or 6 years, don't normally do that because of injury and things like that. So if they can have a good training camp, come out ready to play, they certainly could, you know, have a winning record in those first 12 and kind of set the tone for the rest of the season.
David Wesley, Pelicans TV color analyst, breaking down the Pelicans schedule. Senior David Wesley 4 on Twitter. What's favorable, what's not, David, about the schedule for the Pelicans?
You know, I don't really think, you know, and I go back to, you know, something Alvin says that everybody has to play everybody and the schedule is what it is. I don't see it as favorable or unfavorable. They do have some long road trips. But there's some days in between where, you know, they have a chance to get rest and still come out successful. So, you know, it's just about how they approach. I thought they finished the season off very well, and they got some pieces that kind of fill the voids of guys that left with Rondo and Cousins. So they have a chance to get off to a good start, and if they get off to a good start, they can get that confidence early and things could be good for this team.
Now, David, being the veteran that that you were, obviously played the game and understand the significant being of certain players, a number of fans, they've looked at it, well, you know, Boogie Cousins, damaged goods, whatever, and they, you know, they wish him well. But they were really distraught that Rondo wasn't back on board. Not going to understand Rondo, you know, his opportunity to go play with LeBron with the Lakers. But what is your take? And obviously I look at Rondo being definitely a coach on the court, but his skill set, how would you compare the expectations now with Rondo no longer being there and Elfrid Payton and the challenges he's going to face?
Well, I think there are certain players in this league you just can't replace. I don't care if you fill it with two people, three people, you just can't replace what they bring. And it may not always be their style of play, which Rondo had a great style of play that everybody enjoyed playing with. He was also a coach on the floor. That's also hard to replace. He was a leader. But I think it's going to be kind of a group effort, especially in the backcourt, with Holiday having to step his leadership role up, with him having to take more of Rondo's role to kind of help Elfrid kind of acclimate himself into this team. Elfrid has to be aggressive and do what he does and not sit back. I think this team plays better when guys are doing their job, doing what they do best, as opposed to watching somebody. I thought that's the reason why this team turned around is because AD finally said,
"Right,
I got to go." And it made all the difference. He was sitting back watching, you know, a dominant player like Cousins do what he does, and it took away from him. But I thought he got back to doing AD stuff, and this team took off.
And, David, speaking of AD going into this season, now Julius Randle, how you think they're going to coexist? And I'm optimistic. I think Julius Randle's the future stud. I mean, I think he already has skins on the wall. But what is your take as far as that combination, him and AD?
He's another player that I think that kind of found his own groove out in L.A. The last half of the season, he played like a complete stud. And if he can bring that in, and again, not sit back and take a back seat. I mean, everyone on this team knows AD is the man, but you have to play the way you're capable of playing for this to be effective. And if he comes right in and just tries to be aggressive and tries to do what he's capable of doing, AD's going to get his. AD's going to find his way no matter who's on the court. So you have to be yourself. And I think if he plays like that and he's healthy, they're going to have some good success, especially down there in the paint.
David Wesley at Senior David Wesley 4 on Twitter, Pelicans TV color analyst, breaking down the schedule. Thanks for the time. We certainly appreciate it, David.
Yep, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, David. You bet.
Back to the phones we go. Nikki and Metairie, what's going on, Nikki? You're on WWL.
How you doing, Bobby and Christian? I want to ask you, what about a horse collar? Are they going to start?
No, you can't do that. Well, you couldn't do that even before the helmet rule. You can't take somebody's head off.
Yeah, but I mean, how are you going to tackle him, Bobby?
You do with your shoulder. You got to get your shoulder in there and just like old school when they had the leather helmets, when you'd fold the helmet in your back pocket. And you know what? I was just thinking about that, Nikki, that, listen, the helmet is a weapon because it's hard.
Right, exactly.
It weighs 2 pounds, two plus pounds, and it's like it's a battering ram. So why not on both sides you have some kind of protection to your head, but it would be more soft and not have that weight behind it. I think players would tend to use their shoulders more.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, go ahead.
LSU, how do you feel about LSU this year? Do you think the ESPN and all the other things, how do you feel about LSU?
I would take the over, even though with all that adversity, maybe I'm a homer because you know my relationship with Coach O.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But I'm going with if the seven's over and under, I'm going over, and I'm taking 8 wins, and I feel and 8-4, and I think you win the bowl game, then you're 9-4 type team.
I'm not as optimistic as Bobby, Nikki. I kind of think the wise guys in Vegas got it right. I think 7 would be where I would land on that with a bowl game victory.
But yeah, but Christian, you got to bet over under. How you gonna? So that means you're taking 6-6.
No.
Well, no, think about that. When you bet,
I think seven wins is.
Well, that's a push. You're not then.
Exactly.
Well, then that means you're not betting.
I'm not betting. I'm just saying I'm taking on over and under win totals if I had to project going right at the push.
You're going with Vegas seven.
Now, I could see them getting to eight if they steal one against Florida on the road, which is possible. All right. But again,
they could steal one to Florida. Listen, I'd be almost. Listen, right now, Florida's not the Florida
vote. If they steal one against Georgia.
Now that's a different story.
Now, you're still there. I think you got eight or nine wins potentially coming your way.
Now,
if they start out 1-2, you're looking at a seven, maybe an eight-win season.
No, for me to get to my eight-win total in the regular season, they got to start out 2-1.
Yep.
And I think Miami would be an easier accomplishment than versus Auburn. So I truly believe that. And I still think, I don't know how it's going to happen, but in Baton Rouge, you got to upset either Georgia, Alabama, and I think most Tiger fans say, well, I think we can beat the Bulldogs simply because Alabama's been such an Achilles heel.
Coming back for Patrick and Brian, and you two at 504-260-1870. Bobby and Christian here on Sports Talk on WWL. All right, right back to the phone lines we go. Brian in Biloxi, Mississippi. What's going on, Brian? You're on WWL.
Hey, Christian. Hey, Bobby. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I don't like this rule change at all, man. I mean, I know something's got to be done, but it just seems like to me that ever since we won the Super Bowl, that the league has gone out of their way to punish us with whatever they can use. And I'll guarantee you, this is going to be so subjective that they're going to make a special exception on us, and we're going to be getting people kicked out of games right and left. I don't know.
Brian, we're going into conspiracy theories that from 10 years ago now. I mean,
Now, Brian, I will agree with you here that they might, because local fan base, especially against the home team, the officials might have to have extra security to exit the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they feel like the mad mob that it was influenced by the outcome of the game, I could see that happening. But Brian, they almost... Because what has occurred, listen, and it used to be, well, you know, knock out the opposing quarterback. That was kind of the name of the game because you're trying to win the game. But, you know, the more you, I guess, progress as a society and you learn things, I mean, you can't just sweep it under the rug. Look what's going to come about in the future with artificial intelligence. I mean, I don't know, but... To me, that's what I think we can revert back. Now, Brian, tell me if I'm off base, but I don't know if you played football or not, but I know the helmet was a weapon, and it has been used as a weapon because it's hard. And,
oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, you remember working out? You'd always try and get your neck muscles strong and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Like a battering ram. So with that being said, what if you take away the hard helmet, and everybody has a soft helmet? That they're not – Come on, human instincts, I don't think you're going just bang your head in there if you don't have that security of a hard helmet. I think you'd utilize more shoulder tackles.
Bobby, I think you said it earlier, though.
Bobby,
I think, Brian and Bobby, you said it earlier, and that is simply the generations that are now going to be taught a different way to tackle, that's when you'll see this not as big of an impact.
What do you think about that the softer helmet, whatever?
Well, I tell you one thing. When I played football, I was a quarterback, and I had a single-bar helmet, single-bar face mask. And let me tell you something. I was real careful about where I stuck my nose. It got broke a couple of times.
Right. Right. I mean, if you think about – you know, this is a trivia thing. You know who it's amazing because you did, off the top of my head, a couple of things to influence American football, professional football. Now three things come to mind. You ever heard of the name Paul Brown?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Cleveland Browns?
Yeah.
Now, think about this. It's because of Paul Brown, the Brown family, and then they end up owning the Cincinnati Bengals. Think about that. He was the first one, and it was an acrylic face mask, to put a face mask on a helmet, and he was the first one to send in plays from the sidelines.
Yeah,
you don't talk about impacting history of American
That's
football.
That's ahead of his time.
But yeah, Chris, I'm talking about
at that point, it's cutting edge,
like the early '60s, whatever. But I mean, we had a few decades of football, like professional football, right before the Depression, or right after World War One when it started. They didn't get face masks till I want to say maybe late 50s. I think I'm thinking right now early 60s, and I think it does matter. You know, we want to make the helmet better, but all of a sudden this thing weighs a couple of pounds, and you have that false sense of security because you have this helmet and you can utilize it as a weapon and knock people out, whether you're running over people or you hitting them as a linebacker or just tackling. So that's why now you obviously gonna if you're an orthopedic surgeon, you definitely would want to be in the shoulder repair department, because he definitely would have, and I think you will, Christian, in the future, and Brian, you will have more shoulder injuries mm-hmm. if they're truly tackling, like whether it's high school, college, or professional, how they want you to tackle going forward.
Great text here at 870-870. Look at the hockey helmets, thin plastic. I don't know if they hit with the greatest impact that NFL teams do.
They don't butt heads. And right. Hockey, when you check it against the board, just like shoulder to body.
You're going to get your head up against the glass or up against the board, but you're not going head-to-head on the offensive line or a linebacker on a backer. It's not the same kind of collisions. It's violent now. Hockey's violent. There's no doubt about
it. Right, right. But it's not like, you know, like battering ram. It's not helmet.
Speaking of
helmet.
Hockey, so get a new ice skating rink down here, man.
What, in Kenner, right?
Yeah, in Kenner. We're gonna go skate,
but it's, I heard it's like fake ice, but it's like ice, but it's not really ice, you know. Technology
who
today,
who knows? Yeah.
But one of those, though, Christian, I would pay to see, because I know you could skate, and you know myself being from South Louisiana, that I cannot ice skate.
Yeah,
but part of our WWL team, I know Steve Court can ice skate.
Grew up in Colorado.
Yeah, I would like to see him cross check you. Into the boards.
There we go. With Bobby wanting to inflict.
So, Chris, how much you weigh? Even okay, when you're in shape, but you're not out of shape.
Nah, in between 190 and 210.
Okay, so you'd have to go against a 300 pounder.
No, thanks. I'm good.
Yeah.
I just gotta hope I can skate better than him.
You know who else is unbelievable? God, if I can remember this story.
What is it with you? Like, why? There's a genuine. Do you have like a voodoo doll of me? That you just like want to inject pins in? You want to see me in pain?
No, I just want to see your Marine toughness if it comes about.
Yeah, that went by 16 years ago when I got out.
Well, if you're going to raise the white flag, I want to just see.
No, I won't quit.
Okay, exactly.
I can take a beating.
Well, that'd be interesting. But anyway, you know who else? Who played with Steve Court and myself? Jim Dombrowski, played at the University of Virginia from Buffalo. I think he's also an ice skater, played hockey. So I guarantee you, when you got athletic individuals like Jim Dombrowski and Steve Court ice skating, and they come check you, they could check you in the boards, and you might break your neck, depending what happens. So, yeah, it can be pretty violent and physical, but you don't see hockey players, like, lowering their head and headbutting one another.
Right.
It's not the makeup of the helmet. That's why I think in the future – they need to take out the helmet as far as being a weapon and maybe go back to old school where you're almost forced to tackle with your shoulders. Now, like I said, again, you might have a few more broken noses or separated shoulders, but you're not going to be dealing with your brain and maybe hindering that with dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever in the future. But even if you don't play, listen, that's a major thing we got to grasp, society. Different loved ones are dealing with Alzheimer's. Every family's affected by that, and we definitely have to address it, and hopefully we can find a cure for that. But you don't even have to play sports, and you're dealing with the brain and the ill effects of it as you grow older.
Cordell and Patrick, sit tight. Also got Doug Mouton, WWL-TV sports director, next here on Sports Talk on WWL. Doug Mouton, at D Mouton WWL on Twitter, WWL TV sports director. Doug, I got to find you, man. You were late.
No, I know. And I did this thing at 5 o'clock about Alvin Kamara, and we were recording it in the studio And so I apologize.
That's all right.
It took me a few minutes longer than I thought. Because the thing that about Kamara that kind of bugs me was when I hear people say he got it 13 times a game. Just give him the ball more with Ingram out. That's it's that's sort of lying with math, because by the end of the season, last three games of the season, he averaged 19 touches a game, and you can't go up on that number. And the offense became so much more running back heavy that between he and Ingram over the last 12 games, I'm throwing out the Atlanta game in Atlanta because Kamara got hurt, they averaged 35 touches between the two of them. That means somebody, if you're going to run the same offense that's not Kamara or Ingram, has to get the ball 12 or 15 times. And so I did a mathematical explanation of that.
Right.
So there we go.
No, Doug, I love numbers. I'm a numbers guy, and that's why you got to look at the length of the season and how he's producing come December and hopefully into the playoffs. So that's why, no, you don't give him like the workhorse, like old school Earl Campbell, whatever. Oh, no, we're going to just feed him the rock 30 times a game. No. Whether that be in the pass game, you don't want him beat up. You want him ready to roll towards the latter part of the season. Now, Doug, the question I have for you, and it's just kind of like among the media members, when you look at it doesn't happen that you have the offensive and the defensive rookie of the year on your team, and it occurs the same year. Not different seasons, the same season. So when I look at Alvin Kamara and I look at Lattimore, you know, because in theory you always say, well, you know, what have you done for me lately? Every season's a new season. To me, Alvin Kamara looks like the Alvin Kamara of last season. He could build upon his success. And I've said Lattimore before, this is OTAs and minicamps before training camp, could be the greatest cornerback, obviously, in Saints history. But when I look at the matchups, when you're going against best and best, Michael Thomas has gotten the better of Lattimore. You might say, well, Lattimore's a gamer. But if I'm charting a number of plays, what occurs, and I've seen at times maybe just trying to make a big play, but Lattimore gets beat on double moves, and he's probably had more passes completed on him than even Ken Crawley throughout training camp.
I agree 100%. I wrote something yesterday about five most pleasant surprises at camp. And look, it's the guys that we've talked about for weeks, Marcus Williams and Tre'Quan Smith. I think Trey Hendrickson has had a terrific camp. But yeah, the one guy to me, the one guy that I think has really had a disappointing camp is Lattimore. Now, he was so good as a rookie that, he looked, like you said, you just hope he's a gamer and it doesn't matter. But there's no doubt that he has does not look as sharp in this camp as he did even last year when he was still learning. I had written him down as doing some amazing things at this point last year, and I have not at this point this year. He's one guy that I think I'm curious to watch how he does, you know, once game one starts. But I think you're 100% right. I think he's the one disappointing guy. And look, if not everybody jumps off the page, and it's hard if you're a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman or especially a running back.
Right.
And there's not full tackling. It's hard for some of those guys to jump out. But look, Arthur Millett in camp has made way more plays than Lattimore has so far in this
camp. Right. And Doug, along those lines, if we just look what has occurred in OTA's minicamp and training camp, you would think now Saints fans say, well, God, they still want to see it in the future that Marcus Williams looks like the rookie NFL of the year on defense.
No doubt. Marcus Williams looks unbelievable. He's everywhere. And it's great stuff between he and Drew Brees. Clearly, Drew Brees is coaching him when he's playing quarterback and teaching him things about being looked off and not being looked off and how to get here. But every single person, and we've asked a bunch of people, you know that, Bobby,
right,
every single guy on the team about Marcus Williams, and they have all been glowing reviews of him so far. Yeah, he's doing everything right. And the one thing about him, Bobby, when we talked to him Saturday, when he was lining up to do the interviews and we were first getting the cameras together and it was me standing right in front of him, he looked at me and he said, okay, anybody asked me about last year, I'm not talking about it. If you ask me about it, I'm walking off. And to me, we've done that story. It's done. I wasn't going to ask him that anyway.
Right.
But boy, he really has – he has a focus and a straight face going forward, that is really impressive. I think he's going to have a great year.
Well, you know what's crazy, Doug, when I think about this, the new rule about helmet to helmet, see what you hit. That's one thing Marcus Williams did not do when all of a sudden, think about this. He missed a flight or he lost a flight at a ball, so he ducked his head. And then he didn't see what eventually could come about, whether it had been pass interference or bang-bang type play, because we know his skill set on the football. But the bottom line is, with the NFL is promoting, you got to see what you hit and keep your head up. Do not duck. And we all know he ducked in that play, and I think he's learned from that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It's a shame that for now he's defined by that, but I don't think that's going to last for long.
Doug Mouton, WWL TV sports director here on Sports Talk, at DMouton WWL on Twitter. Doug, Keith Kirkwood, how intrigued by you are you by him? And I did my way too early 53-man roster projection, and I went back and forth as to whether he's going to end up making this team. I know the Saints are targeting him a lot.
Did you put him on the team?
I ended up putting him on this time, yeah, on the team.
Doug, do you view him as like the new project, the new Brandon Coleman?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to say. Clearly, this team ran the ball last year 9% more. That's a lot of extra running plays than they had the three previous seasons. Brandon Coleman played 651 snaps last year, not because he was a threat in the passing game, but because he could block. When the Saints went out to look for a slot receiver, they signed Cam Meredith, who now apparently has another mysterious injury that we don't know much about, and Traquan Smith, who's another big receiver. The Saints clearly want big receivers they can play in the slot. Now, look, Ted Ginn is a unique weapon, runs like nobody else. He has a role. Mike Thomas is Mike Thomas. He obviously has a role.
Right.
But in those slot receivers, they want to run the ball. They want to run on the edges. They clearly want slot receivers who can block. That's why Willie Snead had no more place in this offense. They want, and Kirkwood, you look at him, and he looks like a guy who should be able to block. I would see him more. If Meredith's healthy and you have Meredith and Traquan Smith, you don't really need three guys in that role, and you can probably find a better special teams player. I would guess Kirkwood would be a guy that would probably get cut and then pick back up on the practice squad.
Yeah.
I would see if he's taking
Justin Hardy's spot
or Arthur Millett's spot, I'd rather have those guys for special teams.
Well, Doug, I look at Keith Kirkwood, and I told this last night in a second guest with Mike Dettelier, is that the one thing kind of Brandon Coleman-like, and I'm telling you, I'm at every practice, he'll make a nice catch, a nice play, and then I've seen him, whether it's lack of concentration, drop a curl route. He's had at least five or six drops, but talk about an outstanding individual.
I mean,
he seems like, humble, very coachable. I know CJ embraces that. He'll do whatever the coaches want him to do. He says he wants to be able to play, and I think he's doing that. Every wide receiver position, what I admire about him, he prays after every practice. Some people say, what does that have to do with it? That means he's humble and he's hungry. Now, all he has to do is, like, if it hits your hands, you got to catch it. You know who catches everything? I don't know if he'll make the team, but they kept him on the active roster. Austin Carr, when he stole him from the Patriots. If Kirkwood could be like Austin Carr and catch everything, for sure he's making the team.
Right. And as the Saints ran the ball more, Austin Carr wasn't a guy who was going to help you block and on the edge. So that's why Brandon Coleman had much more of a role. Yeah, look, and to me, Kirkwood is, was a guy who played basketball in high school, came to football super late, wound up at two different colleges. Honestly, the practice squad was created.
Doug, I got to jump in here, man.
Like him. He is literally the poster child for a guy who has some ability. You look at, and look, he's one of the.
Doug, I got to jump in here, man. Doug, I got to jump in here, man. We got to go to a break. Thanks,
sure.
Doug.
Okay,
thanks, Doug.
All right. Thanks for Bobby asking a very long question.
That was a long answer, Christian. I got a long answer and a long question.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.